Next case is 09-1505, First Cal Industrial 2, Acquisitions versus the Franklin County Board of Revision. Mr. Petkovich.
Thank you, Justice Moyer, Justices of the Court. My name is Wayne Petkovich. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, First Cal Industrial 2 Acquisitions, LLC. This case arrives at the Supreme Court following a determination of the Board of Tax Appeals, which followed a determination of the Franklin County Board of Revision, wherein the Board of Tax Appeals determined that there was a bulk sale with regard to not five, but six separate properties. Now, in Appendix A-20 of the appellant's brief, which is Board of Revision Exhibit B, is a real estate tax conveyance form which sets forth six separate and distinct parcels of real estate. The Board of Education filed on five of these and made an allocation of the total sale, the bulk sale price. Now, the properties in issue range in ages from 1974 to 1999. They range in size from about 85,000 square feet to 184,000 square feet. They have different tenancies at the time of sale. They were all the way between 0 and 100%. As I indicated, the allocation made on the complaint filed by the Board of Education was made by the lawyers for the Board of Education. The conveyance form contained one bulk price with regard to six, not five, as indicated by the Board of Tax Appeals. Now, three cases, I think, are pretty much involved in this particular issue. About 12 years ago, I argued before this court on behalf of Corporate Exchange Buildings 4 and 5. In that particular instance, the taxpayer purchased two buildings off of Cleveland Avenue and by I-70 or 270 for $14,500,000. One building was about 85,000 square feet. The other building was 134,000 square feet, as I recall. The president of the company that put the deal together testified before the Board of Tax Appeals how he would allocate it and how he put the deal together based on the square footage. The county denied a change in value, even though the county had the value on it $19.5 million, or $19,030,000, excuse me. They paid $14.5 million for it. The county said, we refuse to allocate that because you haven't proven an exact value of each of these two buildings. And you could probably scull a sandwich between one building and the other. In this particular instance, these properties are in two separate taxing districts, and they're all over, as I indicated, and they're commercial buildings, warehouse buildings, and some are office and warehouse admixture. They're different ages, different configurations, different architecture, et cetera. In Corporate Exchange, the Board of Tax Appeals said, in affirming the determination of the Board of Revision of Franklin County, where this case emanated, that because you did not prove a separate and distinct value for each of these two buildings in one bulk sale, we're going to continue to tax it at $19,030,000. And it was Justice Stratton who filed a dissent, a rather long one, finding that that was capricious and arbitrary and unreasonable. But nonetheless, the majority of the court said, because you didn't prove the value between these two buildings, it stays at $19,030,000, notwithstanding the arm's length sale at $14.5 million. The second case came along involving a bulk sale, and that was Ping Properties. And in Ping Properties, there were 47 condominium units out of a large condominium complex that sold in bulk sale for X number of dollars. And this court said it would be okay to take these, and the court used the words virtually identical, these virtually identical separate permanent parcel numbers, and divide them into the bulk sale price to arrive at a value of each. The thinking, I believe, of this court in that particular case in Ping Properties was, since these condominiums were virtually identical, they could be treated as a fungible type of item in terms of finding a value per parcel. In this particular case, we've got this admixture of parcels in two different taxing districts, and not five parcels as found by the Board of Tax Appeals, but six. Now, what happened in this particular instance, one of the properties sold at the time of the Board of Revision hearing for significantly less than what the allocation was of the school board in its complaint or the Board of Revision decision. A second property sold for less than that. And if we take the property that they did not file on, which is the last one listed on Appendix 20, which is Board of Revision Exhibit B, it's a land-only parcel that the county auditor had on for $635,000. In making the calculations how to spread out the numbers on the improved parcels, the Board of Education didn't take out the $635,000. They took this bulk sale price and divided it by among the five parcels as opposed to six parcels, and notwithstanding the fact that one of the parcels by the time of the BOR hearing had sold for significantly less than that. Subsequent to that, another property sold for about $600,000 less than allocated and determined by the Board of Tax Appeals, which basically affirmed or rubber stamped the determination of the Board of Revision. So in paying properties, you have fungible assets, no different than if I would go to the bank with a dollar bill, get two rolls of pennies. It's not an extreme form of calculus to determine that each one would be worth 1 cent. Here we have different buildings, and on some of these parcels, there's more than one building. On one parcel
May I just interrupt you so I understand this? The two parcels that were in the bulk sale and it had no improvements on it and sold for less than what the value was that?
Two of the parcels that sold actually were improved parcels that sold.
All right. The amount listed on the real property conveyance fee that was then above what the appraised value of all the properties were, and then of course once property two of them sold for less than that, or there was extra value, was that allocated then to the remaining four or five?
At the time of the Board of Revision hearing, the one parcel that had sold was removed, called out of that,
right.
And then they took that bulk value, which is includes now it goes down to four, and spread it out among the other parcels.
Okay. that was what I'm trying to find out.
And, you know, it must be borne in mind that in this particular transaction, it was a bulk transfer from one real estate investment trust to another. And there were 72 properties involved in this bulk transfer. And those properties were in Butler County, Hamilton County, Franklin County, Summit County, and Cuyahoga County. So there were arbitrary numbers put on that, and that tax conveyance form, which is Appendix 20, is a necessary item before you can file the deed. The county auditor wants the conveyance tax money. So somebody put an arbitrary number on there. Now what if, for instance, if someone, let's say there was a county that had a 20 mil tax rate, we'll make it extreme, and Franklin County, in this particular two taxing districts, separate taxing districts, was at 100 mils and 110 mils. What if they made all the allocation to the county that had a marginal tax rate, you know, in this bulk transfer? Or, as I indicated in the brief, what if there were two different law firms representing these two boards of education? And one law firm says, well, all of this increase should go in my taxing district and make that allocation. And the other law firm says, well, all of it should go in my taxing district, and they allocated all the increase to their taxing district. Do the lawyers get to make evidence? Because this is what happened in this case. The lawyers get to make evidence. And in corporate exchange, the president of the company that put the deal together, according to the Board of Tax Appeals decision, was not competent to testify how he had his company spend $14.5 million on two pieces of property. In this particular instance, the court has already stated that when you have a bulk sale, and this is the opinion written by Justice Moyer for the court in St. Bernard Self-Storage, says bulk sales do differ, however. Unlike a simpler transaction where a single parcel of real property is sold individually, a bulk sale may involve the sale of all of the assets of a business, whereby a parcel of real property constitutes one of many business assets sold at the same time for an aggregate sale price. That's not involved here, but it says, alternatively, a bulk sale may consist of a sale of numerous real estate parcels at an aggregate price as part of a single deal, and that's what we have here, except there were 72 properties in five counties in Ohio. In all such cases, a question arises beyond the basic pronouncement of Berea, whether the proffered allocation of bulk sale price to the particular parcel of real property is proper, which is the same as asking whether the amount allocated reflects the true value of the parcel for tax purposes. This court went on to state, in bulk sale cases, we typically look for corroborating indicia to ensure that the allocation reflects the true value of the property.
The question I have is, who has the burden of proving what the values are? Is that?
It's been more than well established before this court that the complainant at the Board of Revision bears the burden of going forward. In this particular instance, the complainant was the school board. There was no countercomplaint filed on behalf of the taxpayer. I made an appearance there. We tried to proffer the purchase contract with regard to the property, which detailed all of these different properties that were being transferred. But the burden of proof was squarely on the shoulders of the Board of Education.
Well, but we also have a line of cases, as you know, that follow the statute that say that the best evidence of true value of property is the most recent arm's length sale. And here we have that. There's a conveyance fee form filed, indicates the value of the combined value of the properties. And so, as Justice Stratton says, the question for us, a legal question here, is who has the burden to show that that's not correct?
And person seeking to increase or decrease, Justice Moyer.
Well,
and
okay,
that would have
that's
been
your
the
answer.
Board of Education. Okay. Well, you know, this court said
that. Why wouldn't it be? Why, if the presumption is an arm's length transaction reflects the true value of the property, why would it not be the burden then of the person wanting a different benefit to prove why we should not follow that standard rule of law that we've established?
Well, I understand your question, but the fact of the matter is that once you file a complaint, you do have the burden of going forward. And the question here is whether or not the lawyer for the school board can make an allocation and have it become evidence. There is no evidence with regard to any of these single industrial properties in these two taxing districts as to the value of A or B or C or D or E, or any value with regard to the vacant land parcel, which is the last one listed on Board of Revision Exhibit B. So there is no evidence with regard to the value of these properties. And certainly, if you look at the court's two determinations in Corporate Exchange Buildings 4 and 5 in 1998, and you look about a year later at Ping Properties, okay, you have fungible items, they're virtually identical, and this court came out in Corporate Exchange and said the properties are not identical, and I believe that's the second paragraph in the factual presentation of the court.
Counsel, the valuation was not assigned identically in this case, was it? It was assigned proportionately to the appraised value of the property. So there was some nuance to this. And I understand your argument is, well, there's no evidence to support that. As a practical matter, then, your argument is there was a difference between the appraised value and the bulk sale value as reported on the mm-hmm. conveyance fee form. For tax purposes, your argument is that just disappears in this case. So that extra valuation gets assigned to no parcel, and it's taxed to nobody?
Justice Kupp, I think that the saw cuts both directions. And if you look at Corporate Exchange, you've got a $19 million valuation on $14.5 million of money that was spent for the property in an arm's length transaction. The taxpayer got that one. And in this particular instance, obviously there is something that should call into question even the allocation the school board made or this whoever put down this bulk sale price, for the simple reason that two of these properties sold for significantly less than what was allocated or even within the strictures of the bulk sale of the six properties. In addition to that, when Board of Education's lawyers made this calculation how they were going to spread it out between the two taxing districts and all these different buildings. They forgot the one parcel, which is the last one listed. I think it's 295-277, I think are the last numbers. It's the last one listed on Exhibit B before the Board of Revision. That was a land-only parcel, and I think the reason that was excluded, it would be difficult to make an allocation to these improved properties that have these industrial buildings on it, and then you got this vacant piece of land sitting over here.
We have several layers of allocations in this case, if I understand this correctly, since it was an interstate sale is one thing. You allocate a certain amount of the value to Ohio, and then it's a multi-county sale in Ohio, so they have to allocate the value among the counties. And so somebody determined when they made out the real property conveyance fee statement for Franklin County that this was the value in Franklin County. So regardless of what the outcome is, somebody has made value determinations at several layers before we actually get to this case, right?
Well, yeah, but are we going to have two different rules of evidence? If you're a taxpayer's lawyer, then you're going to have to tell your client, look, you know, if you've got a bulk sale, I'm not allowed to allocate it. And if you're the president of the company and you're not an appraiser, even if you put the deal together, you're not allowed to allocate it. And then the school board lawyer can tell their treasurer or whoever hires them, look, I can allocate these things and have it become evidence. And that's exactly what we have here. We can have an allocation made by a lawyer. You can't point to any of these buildings and say, this is worth this and this is worth this in terms of the complaint. Subsequently, you can because they actually sold in an open market situation to a unrelated buyer for less than what was allocated. And I don't know what accountant put the allocation together.
What's your recommendation of a remedy if we find your position is, we accept your position, what's the remedy? Do we send it back for another evaluation or do we do that here or what?
Well, Your Honor, I think in order to be consistent with Ping and consistent with corporate exchange, okay, that you overrule the Board of Tax Appeals and direct them to issue an order to the county auditor to put it on for the original value. If you're going to be consistent with corporate exchange, because in corporate exchange, in your dissenting opinion, and it was, I liked it, frankly, no one else did, but I liked it. In corporate exchange, you said it was arbitrary and unreasonable to take a $14.5 million arm's length sale and tax it at $19,030,000. And that's precisely what happened there. Now, shouldn't a taxpayer get the same benefit of that rule of law that the county got in that case? You know, if it's good for one, then it has to be good for the other if you're going to have a consistent type of ruling.
Where was the conveyance statement filed in this instance?
The conveyance statement was filed with the county auditor.
And what value was reflected on that conveyance?
The $34,335,900.
And when you want this remanded, you said this in response to Justice Stratton's question, reverse the order of the BTA and remand for the auditor's original valuation?
Exactly.
Is that the $34 million?
No, the auditor's original valuation was not $34 million.
24.
That was 24
26
million.
Yeah. Or
so, so what million. Effect do we give in response to the chief's question to our case law on reflecting the fair market value as expressed between a willing seller and a willing buyer? We can't ignore that, can we? Just because you want it sent back. And sort of ignore the bulk?
I understand, but a bulk sale is a completely different creature. And in corporate exchange, you had a bulk sale of two buildings, 133,000 square feet, 184,000. The president of the company was not deemed competent to testify how he put the deal together and bought the property. And in this particular instance, you've got an allocation made by a lawyer. I can't find one case anywhere from the Board of Tax Appeals where corporate exchange was ever used by the Board of Tax Appeals to deny an increase. But they keep using Ping properties, which involved fungible condominium units, 47 virtually identical items that were divided into a sale price. They use Ping properties as justification rubber stamping any allocation that's made. I mean, if we're going to be consistent, you have to look at the line of cases from Berea, the earlier line of cases from Cardinal Federal Savings and Loan in 1972, I believe, to talk about what is an arm's length transaction, how do you value property that sells on the open market. But that involves one parcel of property. And I think it was Justice Cook in Ping Properties, in her dissent, said, look, we've got this presumption in the law that a sale price equates to fair market value.
You need to sum up, Mr. Petrick.
Excuse me.
You need to sum up. Your red light's been on.
Yes, Your Honor. In that particular instance, you have one property. And in her dissenting opinion, she said, this presumption should only apply to the sale of one property, not a bulk sale. And as I indicated, in St. Bernard, this court made a distinction between bulk sales and a sale of one item. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Petrick. Mr. Gillis.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Mark Gillis on behalf of the Boards of Education of the Hilliard and Southwestern City School District. I'd like to correct one piece of the argument with regard to the number of parcels that were included in this sale. The conveyance fee statement indeed reflects a total of six parcels. The conveyance fee does. The parcel 560-277650 was a split out of one of the other five, which is reflected in the deed, and was not active for that tax year. It was active for the subsequent tax year, which is why it was not included on the Board of Education's original complaint. The five parcels include all of the acreage that was sold.
And the question I asked your opposing counsel, who has the burden of proof of establishing the allocation? Let's start more simple. Who has the burden of proof in this case originally?
Originally, before the Board of Revision, the complainant has the burden to come forth with evidence. We came forth with the evidence of the sale, which is completely unrefuted with regard to its arm's length nature, and that the assets that were sold are worth the price that was put on the conveyance fee.
And then who has the burden of the allocation between the properties?
Well, the allocation between the properties on appeal is based upon the appellant at the BTA. The Board of Revision made an allocation based upon the pro rata increase and the relationship between the parcels from the auditor's original appraisals. Now, they did make an adjustment because subsequent to this sale, one parcel sold. They set that value based upon a stipulation on that sale price and attributed the difference to the other parcels.
You deducted out the $600,000 and allocated the balance to the other four?
No, the $600,000 is what council has attributed to parcel 277650, which was not active. That $600,000 value is included in the other five parcels for the tax year in question. It didn't become an active parcel until the following tax year. What they did was backed out the $3.2 million sale of the single parcel, applied $3.2 million to that parcel, and attributed the difference that would have been allocated based upon the $34 million, and attributed that difference, which was about $32,000 a parcel, to the remaining four parcels. With regard to, as far as the burden of proof, before it's clear, and this court has said numerous times, that before the BTA, the burden of proof is on the appellant. Now, counsel's made statements that there's no evidence in the record to support the allocation of the Board of Revision. That's simply not true.
Just so I clarify, you admit that our line of cases, the burden of proof's on the complainant. Is the burden of allocation also on the complainant when you have a multiple district property?
Multiple district property?
Multiple pieces of...
I don't think that specific issue has been decided. What Corporate Exchange said is that on appeal to the BTA, the appellant, which in this case is the property owner and in Corporate Exchange was the property owner, has the burden of proof of the allocation.
And the issue, appeal, but what about at the at the original Board of Revisions, you appealed.
Mm-hmm.
You have the burden of proof. Who has the burden of proof at that stage to show the allocation?
Even if you place it upon the complainant, if it's a reasonable allocation, which is all this court has required it to be. In fact, in Blatt used that word and said the BTA, it doesn't seem unreasonable to apportion the total sale price between the existing house and the land value.
You're back to saying what the BTA does. I want to know who has the burden of proving the allocation at that level.
We can put it on the complainant. It hasn't been decided. We can put it on the complainant. But it's to come forth with reasonable evidence of what the allocation should be. What we placed upon our complaint is, first of all, only an opinion. The BOR did not take our allocation. They changed it. They made their own allocation based upon the auditor's relative values, taking into account the second sale of the one parcel. The reference to the sale of a second parcel occurred 3 years later and wasn't relevant to the allocations that were made. A number of things could have happened to that particular parcel.
Are there any statutory directives to an auditor to individually value parcels on a bulk sale?
On a bulk sale, no. They're required to individually value parcels as a part of their reappraisal duties, yeah, but there's
but
no reference
the
with regard
not at the
to
time
a
of filing
sale.
A conveyance statement in a bulk sale.
There's only a place, and it's interesting, there's only a place to put one price on a conveyance fee statement. There's no indication that anywhere where you can put down individual purchase prices when you decide to include more than one parcel on a conveyance fee statement.
And the only obligation on the auditor is in doing the evaluation of individual parcels.
Pursuant to their reappraisal duties.
Reappraisal direction.
Right. Now... The interesting thing, part about corporate exchange is that the proposed allocation of corporate exchange was not based upon the auditor's appraised values, which by definition, if we assume the auditor has done his job properly, is taking into account the differences between these properties. The allocation proposed by the property owner of corporate exchange was simply to allocate based upon net rentable square feet, which means that it's not taking into account any physical or locational differences. It's simply saying every square foot of any building is worth the exact same amount. And there was no support, and the only holding in that case was that there was no support for that allocation in the record.
Council, in corporate exchange, as I understand it, the bulk sale decreased the value of the properties. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Whereas in this case, we have the opposite situation. We have the bulk sale increasing the value.
That's correct.
Does that make a difference?
No, it doesn't make any difference at all. In fact, I believe that if corporate exchange, if the proposed allocation had been based upon the auditor's relative values between the properties, which takes into account the differences of the properties, the result may have been different. The only issue in that case was that the proposed allocation, which was only a statement by counsel, there was no underlying appraisal evidence, auditor's appraisal evidence, property record cards showing the relative differences between the properties. He only stated it in his brief. There was no testimony with regard to it. There was no underlying, you know, in a Colonial Village, this court said that in most cases, the auditor's values are the default. In Blatt, not only did this court approve the use of the auditor's values to determine the relative values between land and building, and not only that, a prior year's valuation, which was the subject of the dissent in that case, here we don't have that. They used the current year value for each of these properties that the auditor had placed and applied the sale price in the same proportion, save the exception of the subsequent sale of one parcel, and then attributed the difference to the remaining four. So that at the end of the day, the properties that were sold were valued at exactly the sale price, taking into account the differences between the properties as those were taken into account with the auditor's original appraisals.
Does the Ping case in any way help us in this particular situation?
Does it help? I don't know if it necessarily helps. Other issues with regard to the Ping case, while those units were nearly identical, which is what the court said, they weren't identical. they weren't contiguous, and they weren't a single economic unit, and yet this court allowed that to occur. Same facts are here. So in that sense, yes, it helps. It helps support the fact that the sale price of a sale of multiple parcels is the true value. Now, in HK New Plan, this court set out a multiple part test with regard to whether or not we're going to reject a bulk sale. It's a sale of multiple parcels for one single aggregate price, and the price on the conveyance fee is nothing more than an allocation of that one price. We have no testimony and nothing in the record that supports that this was one price for all of the assets, and this was merely an allocation. There was no testimony with regard to the sale at all. In fact, the purchase contract that was submitted in sections 19.5 talk about a specific value for the OHM property, which if it wasn't purchased was going to be deducted. There were multiple properties that were subjects to right of first refusals, and it was understood that it's possible that those tenants could exercise those rights, and then those properties couldn't be sold. Specific values for those properties were to be deducted from the purchase price. And therefore, there's evidence, in fact, to the contrary, that each property was valued separately and put into the one purchase price. But appellant refused to provide any discovery. At the Board of Revision hearing, the only witness discussed the allocation sheets that he had seen, which were used to determine the taxes for the tenants because the taxes were passed through. We requested those allocation sheets. They were never provided. The Board of Tax Appeals issued an order for sanctions for their refusal. They have still not been put into the record.
What evidence did your client present as to the allocation of the bulk sale?
We relied upon the auditor's appraisals, the original values and the relative values that were listed on the properties at the start.
So even
no additional evidence was presented.
The auditor's value was much lower, but you took the percentage of allocations and
Correct.
Applied it to the bulk sale value.
Correct.
So you just did a simple mathematical transfer of his calculations.
Yeah, essentially the same thing that this court approved in Blatt, where it decided the land to improvement value when a property was demolished and you apportioned, or the BTA apportioned the sale price based upon a prior year's valuation, and this court said that was perfectly reasonable.
Does LSAG Bailey help you?
LSAG Bailey is actually, it's distinguishable from this particular case.
Isn't it correct that the property owner was able, by providing evidence, mm-hmm. to show that the valuation really was lower than the sale price indicated? I mean, it could be a premium paid for a bulk sale, I would guess, that might be more than one would pay for each parcel.
I can't think of an instance where somebody would pay more for multiple properties than they would for each one individually, but in LSAG Bailey, the BTA, and then in the record, both parties, the Board of Education and the property owner, testified or presented testimony that the sale included assets other than real estate. It included business value that had to be deducted. In this case, we don't have that. The sale has never been refuted to be anything but any arm's length. The appellant has never questioned that the sale price is not the value of the assets that were transferred. And there's no evidence in the record to show that this was a single aggregate price and that individual prices weren't negotiated. In fact, there's evidence to the contrary, which was the testimony of their only witness, indicating that he'd seen the sheets with the allocations of values that the property owner placed on
the property. I guess my point is, to the legal issue before us, and LSAG Bailey, as I understand it, it was the property owner that took the burden or assumed the burden or whatever, of mm-hmm. offering evidence to show that the apparent sales price was too high.
That's true. They did.
Should we
they
apply
did
that here? Should we apply that here or not?
As appellant before the BTA, they have the burden
probably.
To prove the value that they assert. They've presented no evidence whatsoever as to the allocation. And counsel's proposed remedy here results in an absurd result. The only thing he's challenging is the allocation based upon the auditor's values and their relative value to each other. And yet he wants you to revert back to the auditor's value, which does exactly the same thing. The relative values between these properties remain exactly the same as they are under the Board of Revision's decision. So how can he be complaining about the allocation in the first place? The result is the same, except that they escape taxation on roughly $10 million worth of value, which has never been refuted in this case. We would submit that under Blatt and the cases of this court, including St. Bernard, that the burden of allocation before the Board of Tax Appeals was on the appellant, that no evidence of a different allocation other than what the Board of Revision placed upon this property has been presented. And under Blatt, that allocation by the Board of Revision was reasonable and lawful and should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. Use your time, Jim. It takes 30 seconds.
Sum and substance, what we have is the county auditor's original valuation, which is supposed to have gone through a process of reappraisal, whatever the county auditor did. Then we have an allocation by a school board, which became evidence. And one property got sold,
and we
added the extra value onto the others.
But Mr. Gillis says if your remedy is accepted of going back to the auditor's value, you are relying on the same percentages that they're claiming in this case.
No, I'm not relying on the same percentages. I'm relying on values that were determined through an appraisal process by the county auditor pursuant to his statutory function as
the
assessor.
But the same percentage of allocation of the $24 million or $2.4 million, you're relying on the same percentage to each property of the lower value as he's relying at the higher value.
No, Justice Stratton, because first of all, each property had a separate appraisal done by the county auditor. That was the original numbers that were aggregated and then subtracted from the bulk sale price and then factored out by the Board of Education's lawyers. And each property was given X percentage, notwithstanding the physical condition of the property, the age of the property, the tenancy of the property, what type of property it was, whether or not it was 50% office and 50% warehouse or whatever its configuration was, or even its architecture or desirability in terms of the rental market. Oftentimes, you will see a premium paid in the bulk sale purchase because you take all of these assets or none. And if I can control an entire segment of a market or a goodly portion of it, then I can basically set my own market rents in that particular area, and that's what you have.
Thank you, Mr. Petkovic. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.